Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, one of my all-time favorite shows with one of my all-time favorite guests. Arnold Schwarzenegger is back with us. Last week, we talked to him briefly as he celebrated Vets for Veterans Day. This week, a more extensive sit-down. We were out at Bell Gardens Intermediate School where we celebrated Prop 49. This is something that he helped to pass 20 years ago before he was elected governor, went across the state arguing for after-school programs in California. California ended up investing more money than all of the other states combined. Been thousands and thousands of schools and kids that have benefited from this over the years. So we met up with him at Bell Gardens Intermediate School and saw the After-School All-Stars, which is a program he started. And he invited out the U.S. Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, who toured classrooms and played bongos with him and got to hang out with the kids. They did this amazing assembly where they danced, and it was very well produced and very well done. And then afterwards, the governor walked into a classroom with us where we sat down, talked about that, and then had a chance to talk to him about a lot of other topics. The midterms this week, President Trump. We talked about anti-Semitism and his recent trip to Auschwitz as a son of a Nazi. We talked to him about this reports of his feud with Sylvester Stallone from years ago, and some hilarious story there. We talked about his kids, his grandkids, and his legacy. It's a great conversation. He is very giving and very interesting to listen to. So here it is, our full conversation with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Well, thank you. All of a sudden, so formal. What happened?
Yeah.
Just before we were doing high-fiving, and now all of a sudden, Governor Schwarzenegger, yeah. We are now The Issue Is.
Yeah, well.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
It's your show. I'm not going to interfere.
No, it's okay. It's always your show. So we're it's here funny. At this school. We just met with these kids who were so excited to see you. Prop 49, 20 years now, has clearly changed so many lives across the state. When you see those kids and look into their eyes, what goes through your mind?
The first thing that pops to my mind is my upbringing when I was in Austria. And I had my parents there all the time. My mother was there all day, cooking for us breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She was doing homework with us, and she was taking us to the sports field where my father would meet us at 5 o'clock after his work was done as a police officer. And then we would be playing soccer and all that stuff. So there was someone there all the time. And so the reason why I became so passionate about it was because I saw that in America, 70% plus kids come from homes where both of the parents are working, because that's the way you can manage then the finances and put food on the table and so on. And so I said to myself, well, what happens with those kids then after 3 o'clock? There's no one there to take them to the sports field, to do homework with them, to help them with their homework, to do tutoring, or whatever. So the day when I look at those kids in the eyes, I say to myself, my vision, my dream to have kids in America also have after-school programs has become a reality. But sadly, not every kid yet is able to attend an after-school program. I mean, in California alone, we have like almost 2 million people attending after-school programs, but there's 6 million students. So we have to provide more money, more funding for this kind of program. On a national basis, we have to do much, much better too. And so there's like 8 million kids that get after school programs today. And there's 25 million kids that want to enroll in after school programs, but we don't have the funding for it. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is the dilemmas, but I feel so happy to see those kids enjoying themselves, getting after school programs, getting homework assistance, getting arts programs, music programs, physical fitness programs, sports programs, and all of this, and to have adult supervision, which means they will stay here in the school, educate themselves, do the things they love to do, play games and to learn arts and painting, and at the same time they stay off the streets.
Well, and in a lot of ways, that was kind of your introduction to politics, right? Because the next year, the recall, is this movement sort of what made you think, maybe I could do that?
I think that, you know, I've been exposed to politics because I was the chairman of the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports under President Bush. So I hung out a lot with President Bush between 1990 and 1993 at Camp David and at the White House, and traveled around with him around the country and the world. And so I think that he really made me see what a great public servant is all about. And then I grew up, you know, with the Shriver family. So I saw Sergeant Shriver was the head of the Peace Corps and the Job Corps, and created legal aid to the poor and all this stuff. And he talked always about policy. So I saw that also. So I saw Democrats and Republicans alike. And I got a little appetite from that to get involved more into politics. And when you get into this, giving something back to your community, it's addictive. I mean, I said to myself, I had to do more. So when then the recall election came up, I said, baby, that's meant to be for me. And I jumped into the race.
And of course, you won that. You won in 2006. No Republican has won statewide since. We just had midterms again. I know you've offered advice to some of the candidates in that. They weren't able to win. What's your advice to the Republican Party on where to go from here?
I think that my advice to anybody, Democrats and Republicans alike, is find out what the people really need and what they want, and then go and provide that. Because when you are in politics, it doesn't matter which party you belong to, you are a public servant, not a party servant. So don't give me that party crap. I hate when they talk about our party stands for the, I say it's a bunch of crap. What do you mean your party? What does the people stand for? What do the people want? Sometimes maybe what the people want is something to the left, sometimes to the right. What does it matter?
Now, we just had these elections. What do you think the people want right now?
I think that it's very clear that the people go back to the good old days of what Eisenhower said. President Eisenhower said that politics is like the road. You know, the left and the right is the gutter, and the center is drivable, is usable. And that's exactly the way it is in politics. You cannot go and get anything done far right or far left. The center, because that's where people are. And when you really are interested in having accomplished something, then you have to have both of the parties work together, because that's when you really can create great, great stuff. And so this, I just always urge, if it's in California or nationwide, work together. Don't always look at what you hate about the other side, but look at what you like about the people that are on the other side, and let's find something in common. When I became governor, I found things that I had in common with the Democrats. We took care of those things first. And yeah, there was fighting. Yes, there was attacks and all this stuff. But we worked together and we made things happen.
What do you think about Donald Trump running for president again?
You know, I think that's the past. And I think that we have to march into the future. And I think there are very talented people in this country on the Republican side that can run. So I will go, you know, look in the future rather than in a rear mirror.
Do you think somebody else is gonna get the nomination?
I have no idea. Yeah. You know, I know as much as you do. I mean, I can only guess, but I mean, guessing doesn't help us.
Is there anybody you're excited about?
No, I'm only excited about one thing, and this is to bring the economy back, to lower the inflation, to create an energy policy where we really know where our energy comes from in the future, to go and be environmentally friendly and lower the greenhouse gases and the emissions and all that stuff, and to serve the people in this country. There's so many people that are struggling right now with that inflation and with unemployment and all this. I think we just all have to work together to really help people. That's what it's all about.
Since we last talked, you went to Auschwitz and visited that for the first time. We have seen this rise in anti-Semitism in this country and around the world, and I'm curious, what being there meant to you? What was your big takeaway from being there? And how you processed your own father's role while there?
I think that I got involved in this way back in the 80s, when I got involved with the Simon Wiesenthal Center here in Los Angeles with Rabbi Heyer, Rabbi Cooper, and Rabbi May, and started working with them to help them fundraise so they can build this great building, this museum that is now in Beverly Hills. And it was fantastic to be able to do that and to help and to get the Hollywood community together with them and to raise this money. So to me, it was kind of like, I got to show that this new generation is different than the old generation. And I think that was the great thing about Auschwitz, was that I went there as a son of a Nazi officer that was in the Second World War and that fought on Hitler's side. And then to be there with someone that has been born in Austria, who was the head of the Auschwitz Jewish Center. And so now this guy is a Jew, I am the son of a Nazi officer, and now we are celebrating there together that never again, and let's make sure that the people will always remember what happened and never forget, and that this never happens again. So I think that was great for us too, that we're both Austrians in a way, but we come from different backgrounds, but one generation has molded us together and we become friends.
You know, I'm Jewish, and when I visited there, I mean, it was one of the most emotional experiences of my life being there. I'm wondering for you if you can describe the emotions of what's actually like to be there and to see it.
Well, we had an extraordinary tour guide, and he really gave a tour where he spoke of things that made you all of a sudden see it. And it was horrific. I mean, it was like so unbelievable, the things that took place there. How they shot innocent people, how they tortured innocent people, how they exterminated innocent people, how they experimented on them, medical experiments. I met this woman that her doctor was Dr. Mengele. Now, he was the most cruel individual that did all his medical experiments with Jews. And he experimented on her. She was 3 years old at that time.
Wow.
And he was fascinated about her blue eyes. He wanted to copy those blue eyes so that everyone has blue eyes in Germany, as if they don't already have blue eyes. I mean, what the hell? So, I mean, it's just crazy, the stuff that they've done. I met this woman. And she told me all about it. So, I mean, that had a profound impact on me to see this, where the trains arrived, where they delivered them there, and where they experimented, and you see this whole thing. So I just want to go and make sure that I can bring now other people there, and especially people that are maybe on the fence and are not so much into this, to kind of like educate them about this time and about how important it is to learn and to educate yourself and for us to get along.
Why do you think anti-Semitism is on the rise?
You know, if I would be a professor that studies those things, I could give you an answer, but I just don't know. I think all I know is that as it is on the rise in the history, the most important thing is that we fight against it and that we try to educate people. Because I think what the Simon Wiesenthal Center here is all about is education. It's like educating people, this is what happened, and here is how we can avoid it in the future.
I want to have fun on a few things. Recently saw a great picture of you and Sylvester Stallone together with your swords, right? It went viral. There was a story that came out last week that he was doing an interview where he said that the two of you loathed each other in the 90s and that he ended up doing a movie because you sort of baited him into it. Is that true?
Well, I think that we were very competitive. And we both acknowledge that this was very important to our careers because competition creates performance. So I was trying to outperform him, he was trying to outperform me, and what happened was we got better and we were training harder, we were getting more muscular, and we were we were competing at stupid stuff. I tell you, we were competing at stuff like, who kills more people on the screen? So if the script in Commando had 46 people that I killed, I had to go and kill 86 people just to make sure that there's no way that he can beat that. And then he would go and compete against me about who has bigger knives to kill people with. And then the other, who has the bigger gun? And then he has a gun on the Rambo, this big gun from the helicopter. So then I got a bigger gun in the jungle and during shooting Predator, where we mowed down all the trees and everything. So it was stupid competition, but it was in a way funny also now thinking about it. Then when you're in the middle of it, right, it's not funny because then I always had to have like someone that is in front of me that's like the enemy. So that's what motivated me to kind of, I got to go and be better than him. And he felt the same way. And then, funny enough, you get through this stage, and all of a sudden, we are now getting involved, both of us, in Planet Hollywood. Mm. And where he's an owner, I'm an owner, and you know, Robert Earl is an owner, Keith Parrish is an owner. And so now we own this restaurant chain, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden, we are flying all over the world, having the greatest time on a plane and telling each other jokes. So all of a sudden, we grew out of that stage, and now we are very supportive of each other.
Is it true that you'd thought a movie would be bad, but you tried to make it seem like you wanted it just so he would do it?
Remember, when you watch Pumping Iron, I'm very good with psychology. I can talk people into losing, and I can also talk them into making a movie that I would never touch. And so that's exactly what happened.
It's always great to hear how your kids are doing. Since every time we talk, it seems like you have another grandchild. So now you've got two, right?
I have two grandchildren.
How is being a grandpa, or an opa, you say, right?
Yeah, opa.
What's that like?
It's great because you don't have the responsibility or the responsibilities to raise them. So, Catherine brings both babies over to the house, and to play around with the Lulu and Whiskey and with my dogs and everything.
The donkey and the miniature
donkey,
horse.
Exactly, the right? Miniature pony. And they play around with them. They have a great time. They take some photographs. They hang out for an afternoon, and then they go back home, and then she's continued to be responsible for it. I'm not. So that's the advantage. When you're a father or when you're a parent, you're responsible for the kids 24 hours a day. It's wonderful. I'm so proud of her, what a great mother she is. And I'm really proud also of Chris Pratt, of what a great husband and father he is. And, you know, he's working all the time on movies, which reminds me kind of my early career, where you go from one movie to the next and you're very rarely home. He manages it really well. And, you know, my other kids are also fantastic. And Patrick is into acting, and Christina is into doing her documentaries, and Christopher is working for an agency, for a sports agency, and Joseph is doing his thing with real estate.
He's dancing
and
with
acting,
the stars,
and
the, right?
Dancing with the stars. So, you know, I'm really proud of all of them, yeah.
And did that experience of be a father, sort of to bring this all full circle, inspire a lot of this work on after school, on being involved with kids in schools in the first place? I mean, was that a big part of motivating that?
I think inevitably when you have children, then you think much more about children's issues and about what really makes children grow up well. And it always comes down to one thing, and this is, you got to go and pay attention to them. You got to go and spend time with them. Children is kind of like a garden. You can go and you go to the garden every day, and you can water it every day, and you can pull out the weeds every day, you can plant new things every day, you can make sure that it is all clean and everything is perfect. Or you go there every 2 weeks, and then you have weeds all over the place and you have nothing. Mm. So this is the same thing with kids. They need continuous attention and to get a fair start. I mean, that's the most important thing. I want everyone to be successful.
And lastly, I mean, you've got quite a legacy. Greatest bodybuilder of all time, governor of the biggest state in the country, biggest action hero in the world. How does this aspect, this Prop 49 after schools program, how does that figure into your legacy? And how do you think about that?
Well, I tell you, and I said this many times, the interesting thing about it is, and this is why I knew that there was something in me that I did not know when I was young. Mm. And that is the need of giving something back. Mm. And I tell people this always when I give success seminars or speeches. I always tell them, the most important thing you will learn is that how much pleasure you get for giving something back to your community or doing something for someone without anything being in it for you. Mm. It's no career move, it's no money move, it's nothing. It's just you're giving something. And I found out when I became the trainer of Special Olympics, I remember how great I felt doing work for those kids. And even today, it feels so great to me. I think that my after-school programs and all the work I do for the environment or on healthcare or other issues, good government practice, political reform and all of this stuff, I think all of this gives me more satisfaction than making another $1 million. I mean, so I learned that about myself over the years, that giving back and doing things and reaching out and making other people feel good, that that is the most wonderful thing that you can do.
Our thanks to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Our thanks to you for listening. We'll be back next week with a very cool conference at USC. Talk to some of the smartest political minds: James Carville, Reince Priebus, Mike Murphy, Bob Schrum, John Favreau, Senator Barbara Boxer, all a part of this big event that I was one of the moderators for. We'll get into it with them next week as we mark Thanksgiving here. I'm so grateful for you for listening, and hope you'll tune in next time for more of The Issue Is.